Changes in the air at 1265 Lombardi Avenue on Wednesday, a day after the Green Bay Packers parted ways with two coaches. Were Sam Gash and Jerry Fontenot deserving of getting the axe? We'll find out during a season-ending appearance from Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Bird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're looking at a Green Bay Packers 2015 season in review. And to do that, we have us joining us for the final time this season. A little bit sad. There might be a tear in my eye.
Expert interview.
We got Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com. Nathan, how you doing today?
Hey, Brian. I'm doing well.
Good. Glad you could join us on the show for a one last time to look at the 2015 season. Let's get right back into this, though, Nathan. With the Packers firing running backs coach Sam Gash on Tuesday, I want to look at the position as a whole. How did the Packers running backs in general do in comparison to last season, and how did the running game compare to others in the NFL?
I think the running backs definitely did better in 2014 than they did in 2015. Lacy was averaging fewer yards per carry, and I think that was in large part due to him not being able to make guys miss like he had been in the past. In past years, he was among the best running backs at having guys miss tackles on him, but that dropped from 59 to 29 this year. And probably even a bigger difference was Lacy out of the backfield. His targets were cut in half this year for whatever reason. Those touches were also cut in half. Was averaging fewer yards per catch. And then the big thing again was missed tackles. He had 25 players missed tackles on him in the catching game last year compared to just four this year. So that was a big difference over the 2 years. And then even James Starks, I don't think, was quite as good as a runner this year as he was last year. Obviously, he had a lot more carries, which led to more yards. But he had fewer players miss tackles on him this year, even though he had so many more carries compared to last year. And then four fumbles over his last seven games definitely weren't a good way to end the season as well. Was just averaging 2.1 yards after contact per carry, which put him in the bottom half of the league there. So I don't think Lacy was as good, even though he still graded out decently well among running backs, still among at least the top half in the league. But at this point, Starks is probably replaceable by a rookie fairly easily.
Well, you can see from the production maybe some of the reason that Sam Gash was fired by the Green Bay Packers. Nathan, I have basically the same question after the Packers fired tight ends coach Jerry Fontenot. How did they as a position do in comparison to last season and stacking up to others in the NFL?
I think it was a little bit of a step forward this year, mostly because I think Richard Rodgers became a better receiver than Andrew Corliss was. While Rodgers had that low yards per catch average, he was one of the more dependable receiving options the Packers had all season. Most of the wide receivers had, at least at some point in the season, a period where they were dropping a ton of passes, where Rodgers only dropped two passes all year long. And then having the fifth most receiving touchdowns for a tight end certainly helps as well. So Rodgers also improved his run blocking from his last year to this year, which was good to see. So I think Rodgers at this point probably an above average receiving tight end and then average run blocking tight end. And then outside of him, I don't think Corliss did quite as well as he had in the past in the limited time that we saw him. Justin Prillo in limited time looked good as a receiver, so we might see a little more of him in the future, but probably a little step forward for the tight ends, but maybe not as much as the Packers would have liked to see.
In Mike McCarthy's season-ending press conference, he mentioned that he'd like to see Clay Matthews back at outside linebacker next season. Nathan, can you kind of compare and contrast how Matthews did this season at inside linebacker as opposed to the outside?
I think moving him back to outside makes a lot of sense, mostly because Clay Matthews didn't do as well against the run as other inside linebackers do, or as good as other Packers did, for that matter, too, near the end of the season. He was oftentimes getting blocked, missed a lot of tackles, especially compared to how many tackles he usually misses, even though he did make a few good plays in the run game throughout the season. I don't think his coverage was necessarily a liability. I think he improved there as his time at inside linebacker went on. But I don't think that's also necessarily a strength for him either, where his pass rushing on a per pass rush basis, if you group them among the 3-4 outside linebackers, he was top 10 in the league. So I think it makes a lot more sense to put him in a position to rush the passer on 80 to 90% of his pass plays rather than just having him rush the passer on 50% of his pass plays.
Very interesting. Yeah, I think it's a good idea, too, to put him back at outside linebacker. Of course, that means the Packers got to find somebody to take his place on the inside. The offseason will determine that. Nathan, as we take a look back at the last game, obviously Jeff Janis had a good game, but can you put into context precisely how good of a performance this was?
Sure. He had this 7 catches for 145 yards, 2 touchdowns, no drops in this one. Obviously, we'll all remember his catches within the last minute of regulation, but even before that, he had 3 pretty nice catches all on different routes, ending up in either first downs or a touchdown. The only Packers player to receive a higher receiving grade at any point in a game this season was just Randall Cobb in week 3, and that's when he had 7 catches, 3-1 for touchdowns, another 3 for first downs, the touchdown caught back by penalty, and then 2 penalties on the cornerback that was trying to stop Cobb. So, and Janis was just slightly below Cobb in terms of our ratings there. So I do think it's worth mentioning 5 of Janis' catches did come against Justin Bethel, who was the weak point in the Cardinals' secondary, which we knew coming into the game, and that proved true during the game. So I do think this will probably lead to Janis having a bigger role in the future, giving him more of a chance, and that's better than we've seen for most of the Packers' receivers this season. But I don't know how he'll end up doing against some better cornerbacks if he has to face better cornerbacks than Bethel.
We're talking to Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com here at Railbird Central on a Wednesday morning. Nathan, I'm also interested in your thoughts on Nick Perry, who remarkably has 5.5 sacks in just 5 career postseason games. Here's a guy who's, you know, not really, you know, doesn't have much of a reputation for getting sacks in the NFL, and here he's averaging more than 1 a game in the postseason. Has he done enough to warrant re-signing in the offseason?
I think he definitely should be re-signed as long as it's at the right price, because I think in the role that Perry has, he's done a good job, which he's been rotating in and out in the base and nickel defense, very rarely playing in the dime defense, but each of the past 2 years, he's played very well against the run. He had a 7.1 run stop percentage, which was good for top 10 among 3-4 outside linebackers this year. He's the best Packers outside linebacker against the run, so I could see the Packers, if they re-sign him, having him have a bigger role in that base and nickel defense, although continuing to not include him so much in that dime defense. And even with the pass rushing, he isn't really a liability there. He only had 4 sacks this season, 11 hurries by our numbers. But when you consider how often he rushed the passer, that's right around average for a 3-4 outside linebacker. So I certainly don't think you want to break the bank to get Perry back. But in the role that he played, I think he can continue in that role, maybe expand in that role a little bit more and have success there.
Looking at Julius Peppers at the same position, it was just his 36th birthday on Monday. Do you think he was effective enough to play one more season in the NFL?
Yeah, if you take money completely out of the situation, I definitely think Peppers can still be an asset to the Packers' defense. His play against the run has been on the decline a little bit, but if you just save him for that dime defense, he is still one of the Packers' best four pass rushers. He had 53 total pressures on the season, which was good for 13th best among 3-4 outside linebackers. So definitely, if the Packers have the money to keep him, I think it makes sense to keep him there since he can still be effective rushing the passer. But obviously, if there's anyone if the Packers want to make more cap room, he is by far the clear choice of someone that can be cut to save room. I think ideally that he could potentially take a pay cut a little bit, and that's probably the best situation for the Packers and for Peppers if he wants to keep playing. But I think if the Packers' plan is to continue doing what they've been doing, re-signing some of their own free agents, sign their rookies, not so much sign players from other teams, they might be safe with the cap room they already have and might be okay keeping Peppers at his high cap number right now.
Be interesting to find out what happens. One more player that's about to hit free agency, cornerback Casey Hayward. How much interest do you think he'll get in free agency based on his 2015 season?
I think there will be a fair amount of interest in him. We already have our free agent tracker out, so you can see how he stacks up against the other free agent cornerbacks. And there's only a couple of cornerbacks with a slightly higher grade than Hayward right now that are among the same age as him and are free agents. And then also, if you take into account if a team wants a cornerback to play in the slot, it's only really him and Brandon Boykin who was playing in Pittsburgh and only playing late in the season that. If you want a slot cornerback in free agency, those are really the only two that would be assets to teams. Hayward's numbers don't really stand out a ton this season, especially the lack of interceptions, but he was one of the best cornerbacks at making stops in the passing game this year. He had 22 of those this season, which was second only to Tyrann Mathieu, and those are all plays where he either allowed a tackle on third down but made the tackle. So became fourth down or it was a first or second down play. The offense only gained a couple of yards. So yeah, it looks bad to allow catches, but if you make the tackle right after a short catch, then that's still a good thing for the defense. And Hayward was really good at that this year. So I think he'll have plenty of interest in free agency.
As we look at the season as a whole, Nathan, where did the 2015 season for Aaron Rodgers stack up to the rest of his career?
We graded this as his worst season as a starter in the NFL. Obviously, in 2013, his numbers don't look quite as good because he wasn't playing in a lot of games, but on a per play basis, this was his worst year. I know people will put blame on the receivers or the offensive line, which a lot of that was the offensive tackles allowing a little bit more pressure than usual or all the drops, which certainly didn't help his raw numbers, but I think all of that affected Rodgers mentally too and led him to make plays that he typically wouldn't make. He wasn't accurate on a number of passes this season where everything else was going right and he just didn't hit the receiver and wasn't making as many big plays as he usually does. So even though a lot was going wrong around him, he wasn't doing as well just himself compared to his past years. When you look at his scrambling, all of this also led to him scrambling more, and he actually did his best job running as he's done any other year, which typically you see quarterbacks as they get older run less, and he was running more and doing a good job of it. So if there's any positive there, it's that his running was the best we've seen him run. And then despite all of that negative and this being the worst year of his career so far, that's still good to be a top 12 quarterback in the NFL this season. So it's still, even though we're talking the worst for him, that's still above average for NFL standards.
Well, that'll do it for a season-ending appearance for Nathan Jahnke. Nathan, before we let you go, one last time here, I'd like you to give a plug for Pro Football Focus because even though the season comes to an end, a subscription to Pro Football Focus is a year-long thing. So if somebody were to get one now, it would last, through the entire 2016 season. So can you tell us what people will get with a subscription?
Yeah, with the subscription, what you get access to is our player grades. This year, we've gone to a 0 to 100 scale for the grades. You can see how everyone in the NFL is stacked up, both overall and in each individual category, whether it's pass rushing, coverage, pass blocking, receiving, and so on. Along with that, we also keep track of all of the rosters, all of the depth charts for the team. So as the offseason goes on, if a player gets cut or traded, or the Packers add a player, you can go look at their depth chart, and it'll be how we think the Packers depth chart will look for the start of the 2016 season. So, and like Brian said, if you get that now, that lasts you a calendar year, not for a season. So if you got it now, it would last you till January 20th, 2017. And along with that, we'll have plenty of great content at Pro Football Focus throughout the offseason as well. Every year we've done a ton with free agency. This is just our second year grading college, so we'll have plenty on the NFL draft as well. We've already released our second mock draft of the offseason already, so plenty more of those and plenty of articles on players that would be good for the Packers to draft or any team to draft. And also plenty of fantasy content as well. Even though most fantasy drafts don't happen in August, we still keep fantasy coverage going for anyone who's interested throughout the entire offseason. So if you want to get premium, go for that. But there's also plenty of great content at Pro Football Focus as well throughout the entire offseason.
Nathan, once again, thank you so much. We appreciate your insight all season long. Keep doing a great job and keep up the good work at PFF.
Thank you. Have a good one.
All right, take care. Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com joining us here at Railbird Central on a Wednesday morning. If Nathan sounded a little different, we had to use Skype today. Normally, I call him just over a phone line. He called me or emailed me before the show. He's like, I'm in a hotel. I got no reception. We had to use Skype. So if he sounded a little different, that's the reason why. But let's continue on with the show.
Packers news of the day.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers this Wednesday, since our last episode, the Packers made some moves on their coaching staff, which we already talked about with Nathan. Running backs coach Sam Gash and tight ends coach Jerry Fontenot fired, or as the Packers press release says, parted ways with these coaches, kind of leaving room for some interpretation as to whether they were fired or they stepped down, they retired, or just quit, or however you want to say it. Not sure exactly precisely what happened there. But interesting nonetheless. These kind of moves were really, it never crossed my mind, prior to Wednesday or Tuesday, when the firings or the, the transaction took place. It basically, I think it had to do with a lack of production at these positions more than anything. And as Nathan laid it out at the running back position, I think the biggest thing that stands out with the running backs is the career high fumbles. You got James Starks, who had five fumbles this past season. You had Eddie Lacy had four. That's a career high number for both players. So there's that. There's Eddie Lacy's weight. You kind of almost wonder if Sam Gash is kind of a scapegoat for Eddie Lacy's weight issues, which Mike McCarthy called out during his season-ending press conference. But I mean, it's a little bit of all these things, I think. Just in general, as usual, there's never just one thing you can put a finger on. It's kind of a combination of the things I just mentioned, the things Nathan mentioned before, and Jerry Fontenot almost to a lesser extent, because as he pointed out, Richard Rodgers was, he had an improved season in 2015 as compared to 2014. He has some of the best hands at the position in the entire NFL. Richard Rodgers just does not drop passes, and that is a valuable trait. He's certainly not the fastest. He's not going to gain you yards after contact. He had some of the lowest yards per catch average in the NFL from the tight end position. But there are things to like about Richard Rodgers. He had eight touchdowns this season, which ranked second among NFC tight ends, and I believe fifth overall in the NFL. So there's things to like there, but I mean, it is the yards after a catch were a problem, and then the rest of the tight end position did not provide much production either. Although Andrew Corliss was injured, he only played in five games this season, six if you count the playoffs. Justin Perillo, he was injured late in the year, but even upon that, just a few catches here and there. Kennard Backman, the rookie, didn't provide anything at all in terms, at least in the passing game. He played more special teams than anything and didn't even do that all that much. So it is what it is. I'm not sure how much blame lies on the shoulders of these coaches, but if you're looking for a scapegoat, these guys are it, and perhaps that sends a message to the rest of the team that the Packers are taking, you know, a season of unfulfilled expectations seriously, and maybe a message being sent to Eddie Lacy. You know, if he didn't receive the message earlier in the season when he was benched, if he didn't receive the message in Mike McCarthy's comments at the season-ending press conference, maybe this will send the message to Eddie Lacy that things need to change in the offseason, including his diet and his conditioning and his dedication to the game. We'll see as the offseason unfolds. Other news, too bad for Sam Gash and Jerry Fontenot. They will not be taking part in an all-expenses-paid trip to the Pro Bowl, because according to reports, including first reported by Wes Hodgkiewicz of the Green Bay Press-Gazette, the Green Bay Packers coaching staff has been tabbed to coach one of the Pro Bowl teams this season. That it's kind of unfortunate in a way, because it's just yet another reminder of a season of unfulfilled expectations. The job of coaching the Pro Bowl usually falls on the shoulders of a team losing in the divisional round of the playoffs. And this is now the fourth time Mike McCarthy has been asked, Mike McCarthy and his staff has been asked, to coach the Pro Bowl. You know, that's quite a few times for one coach. And you'd rather see him coaching in the Super Bowl than the Pro Bowl. But as I said in an article published at 24/7 Sports, it's also, if you want to look at it through this lens, it's better that the Packers coaching staff is coaching the Pro Bowl than the Senior Bowl. If you're coaching the Senior Bowl, which takes place next week, which I think is it the Chargers and the Cowboys, I think, that are coaching up the North and the South squads there. That means you did not qualify for the NFL playoffs. So at least the Packers now with 7 straight consecutive playoff appearances under Mike McCarthy. That's a good thing, and that's tied for the longest streak in the NFL. People will be reading the tea leaves a little bit, I think, of what the Packers do to coach the Pro Bowl. I'm not sure how much stock you can put into it. But you kind of wonder, like, oh, now Sam Gash is gone and Jerry Fontenot is gone. Who's going to coach the running backs and the tight ends? Well, the Packers do have some flexibility there. They have, you know, and I thought maybe this was kind of the problem all along the season, or one of the problems. I've wrote about this at 24/7 Sports, the too many cooks theory. In addition to Mike McCarthy, you've also got Tom Clements and Edgar Bennett, two coaches very much involved in the game planning and game design of the Packers offense, and neither of them is a coach of a position. So you have to think that it kind of makes sense, you know, that maybe one of them will end up, you know, coaching a position in the Pro Bowl, albeit, you know, how much actual responsibility goes into that is kind of up for debate, or you know, how significant that might be. Maybe makes sense that Edgar Bennett might take over running backs coaching duties, seeing as he's done it in the past. Alex Van Pelt has worked with both quarterbacks and tight ends. Maybe he coaches one of them there, or you know, focuses on one and not the other. I don't know what they're going to do. Be interesting to find out, and if it has any impact on what the Packers do in 2016 and beyond. I don't know. Like I said, I hesitate to put too much stock into it, but I'm interested in finding out regardless how they'll divvy up the duties. In other Packers news, one more note coming out of Tuesday. The NFL, the PFWA, which stands for the Pro Football Writers of America, of which I am a member but did not take part in the voting, they released their all-rookie team on Tuesday, the NFL's all-rookie team, and there were no Packers players represented on the team. And the reason I don't take part in the voting is because I readily admit I do not watch enough film or enough, you know, not just film, the broadcasts even, of teams other than the Green Bay Packers. I've got more than enough on my plate as it is with the Packers alone that I don't see enough from other teams, and I don't feel as if I'd be a representative or good, you know, a person voting on this type of thing. So I just decline in general. But I know there's a lot of smart football people out there that do take part in it. Just in terms of reaction to the Packers, I think the one name that, you know, people thought may be on the list would be, of course, first-round draft pick Demaryius Randle, who actually was voted as the the NFL's defensive player of the month for the month of November. So you're thinking, hey, I mean, the NFL season's only a few months long. If he's good enough to be the entire best player in the league or best rookie in the league on defense, you know, why isn't he good enough for the all rookie team? Well, the guys who made it were Ronald Darby of the Buffalo Bills and Marcus Peters of the Kansas City Chiefs. Peters actually was the defensive rookie of the year for the entire NFL, so he's definitely a deserving selection. You can certainly make a case for Demaryius Randle. Had 3 interceptions this year. I believe he played in 15 games, started 9, so it was just kind of at the beginning of the season where, you know, the Packers weren't quite comfortable with him those first few games of the year, the first month of the year. He was still playing, he just wasn't starting. And then all of a sudden, his role grew bigger and bigger. He led the Packers, I believe, with 14 passes defense this past season. There's a lot to like about Demaryius Randle. He made a lot of mistakes, too, as he's learning to make the transition from safety to in college to cornerback in the NFL. They didn't release results for, you know, second team or who had the most votes at each position. You got to think Demaryius Randle was close, but in the end, no cigar. You could probably make lesser arguments for players like linebacker Jake Ryan and fellow cornerback Quentin Rollins. But those guys, they probably just didn't play enough until late in the season. It wasn't until, you know, the midway part in the year and afterwards until they really started taking on a significant role. But yeah, in the end, no Packers on the NFL's all-rookie team this year. Previous year, last year, Corey Linsley and HaHa Clinton Dix both made it. So the Packers had 2 representatives last year, 0 this year. But continuing on with the show, next segment.
The day ahead.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers, this Wednesday, what's happening at 1265 Lombardi Avenue today is exit interviews with the coaching staff. Mike McCarthy is conducting exit interviews. You got to imagine they're going to be a little bit shorter this year than last year, seeing as he's already fired 2 of the coaches on the offensive side of the football, so no need to conduct those exit interviews. But what it is, you know, it's kind of a way to put the season in a rearview mirror, see what went well, see what didn't this past year, and try to figure out how can this Packers team be better in 2016 and beyond. This is where Mike McCarthy kind of starts his information gathering process and looks at, you know, what things, you know, probably more than what went right, although they want to discuss that too, I'm sure, but, you know, really focus on what went wrong and how can we fix it. And that's where he gets all this information. He did it the previous 2 days, Monday and Tuesday. He sat down with every player on the team before they leave town for the offseason. He talks to them one last time and tries to get information. You know, what can we do going forward? and does the same with the coaches. Coaches on Wednesday. So as Mike McCarthy sits down with them, I'm sure they, you know, go through all the players on the roster and just, you know, what can they do going forward? I'm sure coaches give suggestions and Mike McCarthy gives advice during these sessions. And that's what's happening today. In terms of the Packers front office, meanwhile, they're not at 1265 Lombardi Avenue. They're down in St. Petersburg, Florida, where the East-West Shrine game is taking place. Of course, the game itself doesn't happen until Saturday, but practices are occurring all week, and that's where the scouts really do the majority of their work. They can watch the game on TV. They don't really stay there for that. They don't need to be there for that. Some might stay there, but many will just go for the week of practice because in addition to watching practice up close and personal, I mean, they can then talk to the guys after practice and they interview them at night at their hotel and things like that. They really get to know these guys and they can do, you know, chalk talk like sessions and get them on the whiteboard and see what they know and really get to know these guys. So as the, you know, the second best college football all-star game, that's where the Packers are at this week. There's also practices going on at the same time out at the NFLPA Bowl out in California. That's kind of considered the third-tier all-star game, albeit there's still players that come out of that game that are on an NFL roster too. So Packers scouts busy today and for the entire rest of the week, kind of looking for future NFL talent on the All-Star Game circuit, and we'll be at the Senior Bowl next week. In fact, that kind of leads me into a preview of our next episode. For this is an annual thing here at Railbird Central on the show. We'll be having Paul Guillemette of the Great Blue North Draft Report. Online, that is at gbnreport.com. Paul Guillemette is there at the East-West Shrine Game. So we're not wasting any time here at Railbird Central. There is no off season as far as I'm concerned. The show continues on 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and we're getting right into NFL draft preparations. We'll be talking to somebody on the ground in St. Petersburg. Paul Guillemette will give us a report on what he sees going on in the field with the players and what Ted Thompson is up to over there. So looking forward to that on Friday morning, 8:30 a.m. Central Time, the live edition of the show, as always, on Monday, Wednesday, Fridays. That'll do it for today's episode, folks. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us. Thank you to Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com for joining us not only today, but all season long. It's sad to see him go. Maybe we'll talk to him once more before the NFL draft and get his call back, Nathan, for old time's sake. But my call to action, as usual, maybe if you haven't done this all season, you can do it now. We'd appreciate it. The one small thing we ask, this show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. The one small thing we ask is you could give us a rating or a review on iTunes. All you got to do is go into iTunes, search Cheesehead TV, just give us a quick rating and review. It doesn't have to be long, just a sentence or two, and we'd really appreciate it. It's the one thing that helps get a word out about the show and lets people know, hey, this is the best Green Bay Packers podcast out there. And I think it is because we do have no off season. Whereas some people take time off, we go right through it. We analyze the NFL draft and it starts now. But that kind of puts a cap on the 2015 season as a whole, folks. We're looking forward to 2016 now. Thanks for joining us. Have a good Wednesday, folks. We'll see you again in a few more days. I leave you today with a song called The Place That I Call Home by the infamous String Dusters on Psy Fidelity Records. See everyone. Go Pack Go.